Lent used to be a truly penitential time of the year for Catholics, but now we talk mostly about giving up chocolate or fasting from judgment or something like that. How can Catholics reclaim Lent and make it truly a time to prepare in a penitential way for Easter? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, just want to encourage people to smash that like button, to subscribe to the channel. Don't hit the notify bell, however, because you have a life outside the internet. But if you are on the internet, how do you like that segue? Feel free to follow Crisis Magazine on the various social media channels at Crisis Mag. Okay, so let's talk about Lent. Today is February 21st, the day before Ash Wednesday. So tomorrow we start the Great Fast of Lent. And the name the Great Fast is actually what it is often called in the East. So Eastern Orthodox, Eastern Catholics, they call Lent the Great Fast. The reason they call it the Great Fast is to distinguish it from all the other fasts they do. Unlike us in the West, who basically we just think of Lent as the only fast of the year, although we should be doing some fasting during Advent, the East has multiple fasts throughout the year. They have the Apostles' Fast, the Assumption Fast, I think it is, the St. Martin's Fast, which is their Advent fast, which is longer than our Advent. And there's others, I'm sure. And so they call Lent the Great Fast because it's much more rigorous and longer than the other fasts of the year. It's the most important one. So they call it the Great Fast. But I noted today on Twitter that in the West, Lent is more like the minor inconvenience. For too many Catholics, we treat Lent as just like, okay, let's give up something. Like, I'm not going to have that dessert after dinner each night. And the more popular thing to do in recent years is to basically dismiss the idea of actual fasting, i.e. from food or even abstinence, and talk about things like fasting from judging, fasting from impatience, things like that. Things, frankly, you should be doing all year long. We should always be trying to fast from judging in ways we're not supposed to. Obviously, that phrase itself is loaded these days, but we should try a fast from being impatient. We should try a fast from being nasty to other people, things like that. That's not what Lent is for. Lent is for a deeper dive into the sacred mysteries, a deeper dive into the passion of our Lord Jesus Christ, so that we can fully appreciate Easter. Now, traditionally, Lent has three major aspects, three principles: prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. I think all of us kind of understand that during the season of Lent, those three practices of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving should be the three things that we up our game in, so to speak, that we really try to do more of those. Now, I think in general, so I want to go through each of those three and talk about how practical ways. I'm going to give some resources here. By the way, all the resources I'm going to give today, I will link to in the show notes after the show. I will put them in the description on the website, on the YouTube channel, and other places so you can see them and get to them very easily. But I really want to get practical here and give some practical advice of how can we make Lent better. Now, this is something I struggle with every year too. I don't claim to be an expert in, like, I've done great Lents or something like that. I've had good Lents. I've had bad Lents. Good meaning I was more deeply into the penitential season. Bad meaning I wasn't. And I found when I have good Lents, I have great Easters. When I have bad Lents, my Easter ain't so great. And that's something I think we forget often in our feasting culture where every day is a feast. I mean, let's be honest. Most of us, every day we eat like a king would have ate in the Middle Ages. Actually, less healthy than a king would have ate in the Middle Ages, but that's beside the point. And so we don't really get the whole aspect of you need to fast in order to feast. To truly appreciate the feast, you need to fast. We need to have that balance. We should not be fasting all year long. We should not be spending every single day of the year fasting. But we shouldn't be feasting every day either. And Lent is this great reminder that we really need to fast. It really does help us. So let's first talk about the three principles of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. I'm going to go out of that order because I think I'm going to build up to what we know, to what we don't know more. The first category I want to talk about is almsgiving. Almsgiving is, of course, charity towards others, that we're helping others. Now, here's my practical advice for almsgiving. Number one, look local. give locally. Really, I think that's the number one thing. I get that we're inundated with requests for money and for help all over the world. And I'm not saying you should not give to some organization that maybe helps people in another country. I mean, I donate to organizations that do that as well. But our focus really should be local, because that's what we have a responsibility for. Ultimately, I'm not responsible for a poor person in India, but I do have some level of responsibility for a poor person in my community, in the sense that I should be doing what I can to help them out. And so really think local when it comes to almsgiving. And I would also say prioritize the poor. Now, I'm one who gives, who believes in giving to multiple different types of organizations. My three big ones for have always been for me, for our family's giving, has been to the poor, to evangelization efforts, and to pro-life efforts. It's not to say other work isn't important, but those three are the ones that had we have the greatest passion for in our family, my wife and I, our kids. And so that's what we give to the most. But I would say during Lent, you really should be prioritizing the poor, because I feel like that is what we're supposed to be becoming, is poor spiritually. And so by helping the physical poor, and hopefully by our fasting, giving up some material goods and food and things like that, we have some extra money that we can give to the poor who might go without food involuntarily during the year. Another thing I want to say when it comes to almsgiving is giving out of your excess isn't really charity. If you basically make a ton of money, enough to live on easily, and you're just giving a little bit off of that and you're not feeling it all, that's not really almsgiving. That's not charity. And so what I would argue is that we, especially during Lent, make it hurt some. Make it hurt a little bit. Like maybe you're not going to be able to get what you want because of the fact that you gave so much away. And so I really feel like that's part of it. Also make it hurt in the sense that you're involved. Try to volunteer if you can at a soup kitchen or at some organization that helps the poor, or a pro-life pregnancy center, something like that. Something that actually takes time and hurts a little bit. I really feel like our almsgiving during Lent should be like that. So give so it hurts a little bit. So that's almsgiving. That's probably the easiest one to kind of think about. It might not be the easiest to do always, but I feel like we all kind of are generally agreed on those aspects. Now, prayer is the second one I want to talk about. Now, for prayer, I think there's some basics. Obviously, if you can attend Mass more often, if let's say you can only go to Sunday Mass now, maybe try to find one day a week you go to Mass, another day a week, I should say, than Sunday. If you already go maybe twice a week, try to go three times a week, something like that. Add an extra day of Mass. Hopefully, it'll be a habit that you can stick with after Lent is over. Also, go to confession more often. You should have gone to confession. This is one of the problems with dropping Septuagesima season, is that that was traditionally a time where emphasized going to confession. So you went into Lent, confessed. I mean, that's why today, the day before the Tuesday called Fat Tuesday, is also called Shrove Tuesday, because it's the day you were shriven, which means basically you were forgiven. And so it's a great, in fact, if you have not, if you're listening to this live or listening to it the day before Ash Wednesday, try to get confession today if you can. Enter into Lent confessed. And also try to go at least one or two times during Lent as well. Other things we can do, obviously pray the rosary daily if you're not already. Really try to pray the rosary every day. Pray the divine office, the breviary, liturgy hours, lots of different names for it, depending on you're talking about the old one, the new one, or whatever. I have found this to be a great spiritual practice. And frankly, as lay people, we can't pray all 7 hours a day or anything like that, but we can maybe pick one, maybe matins in the morning, lauds, or something like that, vespers in the evening. These are nice tools we've been given by the church. I would, in general, though, what I would say is, however much you pray now every day, add 10 minutes a day during Lent. So if you pray now for a half hour, pray for 40 minutes. If you pray for 15 minutes, pray for 25 minutes. It's just a good way to bump up your game. You're enthused. You're incentivized to pray more during Lent. So that's a way to do it. And hopefully, like I said, after Lent is over, you'll stick with it. So really just add 10 minutes. Now, here are some resources. I want to go through a few specific things that I recommend that I think are good for the season of Lent to use. Now, one of them, the first one is I'm going to recommend is Divine Intimacy. That is a classic book by Gabriel of St. Mary Magdalene. And what it is, I'm, by the way, if you're watching, I'm pulling up the website with the page at Sophia Institute Press where you can buy it. It is expensive. It's a leather bound book. I have it right here. I bought it years ago, not even from Sophia. I don't think they were selling it at that time. It's this beautiful leather bound book. It's very thick and it's wonderful. It's like you said, $65. So it's not cheap, but it's really a great book. Basically what happens is every day of the year, there's a meditation, multiple meditations in which you go through different concepts. On the Sunday days, they do the reading for the day. Now they do, it is an older book, so it uses the traditional calendar, not the new calendar. But really, even if you're on the new calendar, it's not really that big a deal because most often it's just the Sundays that where he does that. But during Lent, it's really focused on meditations on Lenten, on Lenten practices. And so I just highly recommend there's a reading for Ash Wednesday. Like the day after Ash Wednesday is on death. That Friday is a proof of love, the spirit of mortification. So you see, there's this, the great combat is the first Sunday of Lent, conversion, Monday, first Monday of Lent. So Divine Intimacy, I highly recommend. It's a great book. And that's to really help your prayer life. That's my number one recommendation for a prayer book, to be honest, is that one. Is if you did that daily, you would grow. It's a Carmelite spiritual tradition it uses. But I've done it many years. I'm not doing it right now because I did it many years. I'm kind of taking a little break and I'm going to come back to it later, but it's just, I highly recommend it. Another book I am going to recommend, and yes, it is my own book, and I don't mind recommending because I think it'd be a good Lenten practice. And that is Who Do You Say I Am? And Unlocking the 24 Titles Given to Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew. And this book, it's just basically what I do is each chapter, I take a title that's given to Jesus. So for example, teacher, son of man, king of the Jews, something like that. And I go through some Lectio Divina, meditate upon what that title means and understanding Jesus. So basically you have 24 days. You could go through one each day and it will allow you to get into the sacred scriptures. And I feel like I'm pounding this drum all the time, but I really do believe that Catholics need to read the Bible every day. And hopefully this book will help them to do that. And I think that's a great time. Lent is a great time to get going on that. So Who Do You Say I Am? Like I said, there's going to be links to all these in the description so people can follow them. Okay, now the next book I want to recommend, yes, I'm going to go through a number of books here because I think they're all helpful. Okay, the next book is going to be, this one is exciting. Aquinas's Lenten Meditations, 40 Days with the Angelic Doctor. And so I like this, the way they sell it here at Sophia. It says, there's a multitude of Lenten meditation books, but only one that's packed with the wisdom of St. Thomas Aquinas. It is kind of hard to top St. Thomas. And so basically there's these sermons from Aquinas during Lent. And so it's a beautiful way to spend Lent. I highly recommend this book too, Aquinas's Lenten Meditations. And I just feel like I've been reading a lot more St. Thomas in recent years, but particularly I've been reading his biblical commentaries, not necessarily the Summa, not knocking the Summa. It's great. But I find his biblical commentaries are just excellent. And I've grown an appreciation of St. Thomas. I'll just say that. I mean, obviously I always knew he was the angelic doctor. He's great, but I've grown a more personal appreciation of him. And so I just think this is another great book, Aquinas's Lenten Meditations. Okay, another one is, let me pull up another one here. Okay, 40 Days to Peace and Union with God, A Journey in Prayer Through the Daily Gospels by Father John Bartonek. I think you'd pronounce him Bartonek. And so it really is just another way that you can go through the Gospels. Now, what this does, this uses the new calendar. And he breaks open the scriptures from Ash Wednesday to Easter Sunday. And so each day of Lent, you have meditations on the gospel. And so I think I think this is another good book that I think should be checked out. Okay, now the last thing I want to bring up for purposes of prayer, the section on prayer, as far as a resource. This is the Bible study. Like when I talk about prayer, I really do think a major aspect of that is reading of the sacred scriptures. And so another way to do it is actually do a Bible study. And there's an online Bible study. I'm hoping, by the way, this is going to play the sound on here. If it doesn't, we're going to have about a minute or so with no sound. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up a video. And this is a Holy is His Name. It's a Bible study from the St. Paul Center. So you see, Holy is His Name. It's a 12-part scripture study by Scott Hahn coming Lent 2023. And basically, you sign up and it goes through the scripture. And now I had Scott on the program on the podcast a few months ago about this book, Holy is His Name. This goes beyond the book and it's really a deep Bible study that's geared towards Lent. And so what I want to do is I'm going to play this video.
In these 12 short episodes, I'm going to explore with you one of the most commonly talked about, but sometimes little understood ideas in our Catholic faith, holiness, and in particular, the holiness of God. And one called to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory. May we live to see it so." I'm Scott Hahn, and I'd like to welcome you to Holy is His Name.
So I think that I'm very excited about this. When it comes to Catholics, helping them understand the sacred scriptures, I really feel like the St. Paul Center is where it's at. They're the best organization for doing that. And so I'd encourage you to sign up for that Bible study. Again, I'm going to link to that in the description so you can get to it. And basically, you just send your email address, you sign up for it, and you get this 12-part Bible study for during Lent. Holy is His Name. And I, you know, if you remember from the podcast when Scott was on the program talking about this book, he did seem like this was the one he was most excited about of all his books he's written. And reading it myself, I can see why. It really is a powerful book to understand what it means to be holy. Okay, so we've gone through prayer. We've gone through almsgiving. We've gone through prayer. Now what I want to talk about is the hard one, fasting. Now, first of all, tomorrow at Crisis, there's going to be an article on fasting. My wife actually wrote it. She's kind of becoming more and more of an expert on this. She's gotten very involved with this. She's studying nutrition, understanding fasting from a physical standpoint, and just combining it with the Catholic spiritual tradition. She's read a lot about it. So I'd encourage you, first of all, to read that article that's coming out on Ash Wednesday about fasting. But here's the thing. I feel like most Catholics are kind of hung up about fasting in the sense of they have this love-hate relationship with it. I should say a hate-appreciation of it relationship. They appreciate that, yes, Catholics should fast, but they hate it so much that they feel guilty about it, even thinking about it. They feel guilty about just the idea that I don't fast enough or whatever the case may be. Maybe they get angry when other people talk about fasting because they're like, I don't feel like I'm fasting on that level. And I feel like we've got a lot of hang-ups. That's probably what I'm trying to say. Got a lot of hang-ups when it's come to fasting. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to encourage people to drop those hangups. One of the things I think we can do is we need to understand fasting better. We understand physically what it is and what it entails so that we can do it better. Because the fact is that it is very difficult to fast, but it's particularly difficult for modern man to fast, almost impossible to do it well in the sense that you get spiritual benefits from it. Because when you read, for example, the Desert Fathers, they talk about fasting as an opportunity to grow closer to God. But let's be honest, when most of us fast, the exact opposite seems to happen. We get more irritable with the people around us. We don't pray anymore. In fact, we probably pray less. We're obsessed in our mind about food. We're not thinking about God. We're thinking about food. And so I really feel like we need to improve our ability, how we fast. And so the first thing I want to say is I want to encourage people. There is, I've mentioned this before, I think, on the podcast. My wife has a support group basically on Facebook called the Saragossa Fasting Initiative Support Group. And what it is, she's the facilitator of it. And basically it's helping people understand fasting. So for example, she's encouraged people in the group to do a 40-hour fast this Ash Wednesday. So they eat dinner tonight on Fat Tuesday, have a great dinner, Fat Tuesday, and then they don't eat again until Thursday morning. Basically go 40 hours, very biblical number. It's also a good number for your health to fast for that long. But she doesn't just say do it. She basically explains how to do it. Like she gives advice. Okay, if you're getting headaches, if you're losing energy, if you're getting irritable, things like that, what do you do? How can you physically overcome those things so that you can be focused on your fasting, so that you're not, I'm focused on prayer and other things rather than just like the fact that you're hungry. And so it's very practical. It uses the latest in what science is telling us about fasting. Some people like Dr. Jason Fung and others. So I encourage people to join that group. Again, I'll put a link to it in the description. If you search on Facebook for fasting, Saragossa Fasting Group or something like that, you'll probably pull it up. And it is a private group, so you don't have to worry about other people seeing what you're writing or anything like that outside of the group. You have to join it. But yeah, so that's the first thing is I just encourage people to check out that fasting group. Another resource is a book. We just had him on, Jay Richards. Recently, we had him on talking about his book, Eat, Fast, Feast. And so here's a book, Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting. What I really like about this book for Lent, and I encourage you why you should consider it for Lent, is he actually has a whole program. Let's say you've always failed fasting. You've never been good at it in the past, and you just, it's not something you enjoy, not that you ever enjoy fasting, but it's not something that you appreciate and get anything out of. Well, this book's for you then, because he has basically a 6-week program that matches the length of Lent. So you start off slow. At the beginning, you're just changing your eating habits a little bit. And then each week you add on a little bit more. I should say probably reduce a little bit each week. And so by Easter, by Holy Week, I should say, you're ready to do some serious fasting. And I think that's a great way if you've never really done it before. So I encourage you to get that book, Jay Richards, Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting. And that's probably the last recommendation, by the way, that I'm going to pop up on the screen. But when it comes to fasting, I think one of the things that I think Catholics also struggle with is the difference between fasting and abstinence. Actually, my wife's article tomorrow is going to talk about this, how early on in the church, like the first 1,000 years or so, the focus was on true fasting, i.e. not eating for a period of time. But over time, it started to gain more traction to talk about abstinence. And there's reason for that. And she goes into that a little bit. But it talked more about giving up certain types of food. So obviously meat, but also things like eggs and cheese and things of that nature. But I do think there's problems with that. The problem is that if you eat, but it's very limited, the food you eat, the types of food you eat, you actually are more likely to have bad physical consequences and an inability to complete your abstinence program than if you just didn't eat. And a perfect example of this is the church's modern definition of quote unquote fasting, which isn't actually fasting, because fasting, there's only one definition of fasting, not eating. But according to the church, your fast can be one full meal plus 2 small meals that together don't add up to a full meal, which of course is extremely subjective and really kind of a dumb way of doing it. But there's reasons that we got to this point. By the way, this is not a Vatican II modernist type thing. This happened over a long period of time that we got to the place we are. Tim Flanders over at 1 Peter 5 had a podcast about some of these issues with fasting. But here's the thing. If you eat a little bit in the morning and a little bit at lunch, like just a tiny little snack or something, maybe just 100 calories, something like that, you're actually going to be worse off than if you just fasted, didn't eat anything. What I mean by that is you're going to be worse off in your ability to transform your penance, your fasting into spiritual benefits. because it's going to make you more irritable and hangry and things like that than if you just didn't eat. And so I really have gotten to the point where I think we should return to true fasting. Now, I'll be the first to say it takes time to get into a rhythm. I did not fast really at all for probably a dozen years, maybe even more. I mean, I would do the minimal that you're required to do on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, and that was it. And really, I found that, and so I get it. I get it if it's hard for you. I'm not trying to act like it's not, but I really think it is possible. Trust me, if I can do it, you can do it. Now, there are obviously medical situations. Obviously, if you're pregnant or nursing, you don't want to fast. And there's other situations, but those are rare. Outside of pregnant and nursing, those are rare. I mean, the Catholic community, like half the women are always pregnant or nursing. So, I mean, I understand that. But the true medical conditions where you can't fast are very rare indeed. So I really think we should focus less on abstinence. Obviously, follow the church's rules about abstinence, no meat on Fridays of Lent, and I would say all year round. But really try to transition more into fasting. And like I said, that book by Jay Richards, my wife's fasting group, just reading a book about intermittent fasting, like Jason Fung's The Complete Guide to Intermittent Fasting, or Complete Guide to Fasting, I think it's called. I think that's very important as well. Just understand your body, understand what your body's doing. Because what I found is when you fast the right way, on one level, it's easier because you're actually doing what your body is able to do. But on another level, it's much more fruitful. Because now you still have the hunger, you still have the effects of not eating, but they can be transformed much better into prayer. They can be transformed much better into works of mercy and thinking about God and helping others. That's, I think, the key difference. So I really, again, read the article tomorrow also by my wife about fasting. Ultimately, fasting should have pride of place in Lent. Yes, there are three ideas, the principles. There's prayer, fasting, almsgiving. But if you look historically, fasting is, because you should be praying all year round. You should be giving alms all year round. You don't need to be fasting all year round. I mean, I do think you should have regular fast outside of Lent as well, but not like Lent. It's called the Great Fast in the East for a reason. That should have pride of place. So I really would encourage you to make Lent a great fast. A great fast. Now, I have to tell a story because I've told it before, but I got to tell it again. Always understand where you are. Don't try to do too much, as they say in sports. Here's the story. I decided to convert to Catholicism on February 25th, 1992. So almost 31 years ago. That was a Tuesday, and Ash Wednesday was a week and a day after that. This is going to be my first Lent, because in my Protestant denomination I grew up in, we did not really celebrate Lent. So I didn't really know much about it. So I found out about it very quickly. And so I decided that Lent, I'm going to give up food. That's right. I was basically going to give up almost all food. I would eat a little bit of bread and some water for dinner, like maybe a slice or two of bread or something like that for dinner each night. I was in college. And that's what I was going to do. I was very enthusiastic about it. I was also very dumb about it. Obviously, I was not able to do that. I got irritable. I got cranky. I was just a person you did not want to be around by Friday. I made it to Sunday, ate on Sunday, tried on Monday, and by Tuesday, so less than a week into it, about a week into it, I gave up. And I smartly gave up. It was stupid to try that. But I like the enthusiasm, as I say. When my younger kids, when they, you know, my teenagers and young adults, when they do something stupid out of great love or enthusiasm for the faith, I never get too upset about it because that's much better than the opposite. But what I learned though there was, okay, you don't just dive into something crazy. Like same with prayer. Like if you're praying 10 minutes a day right now, don't try to pray an hour a day immediately. Try to build up to that. And so likewise with fasting, if you've never done it before, start slow. But again, find some help in a book, in a Facebook group or whatever the case may be, find some help to do it. But really try to be like, when you get to Holy Saturday, the Easter Vigil, look back and you want to say, I pushed myself. And what pushing yourself means is different for every person. So, but you do want to look back and say, I really made this Lent a time for sacrifice, for, as St. Paul says, chastising my body, bringing it into submission. You really want to do that. And so this Lent, by the end of Lent, look back and say, yes, I really did make an effort to chastise my body, to bring it into subjection. Now, you might fall during Lent, but that's okay. Get back up. We all fall. But the idea is, like you say, over Lent, I really did do what the church traditionally has always wanted me to do. Okay, I think I'm going to wrap it up there. Hopefully this was some help for people. Hopefully this will help them make this Lent a great fast. And most importantly, it will make your Easter really pop, so to speak, really be a feast of feasts like it's supposed to be because you've been fasting for the 40 days before it. Okay, that's it for now. Until next time, everybody, God love you.